Good evening, everybody. My name is Sandy Beach, and I'm an alcoholic. How you all doing? It's a pleasure to be here tonight and to help you celebrate such a nice evening. And I also agree with the chief that this is something I never thought I'd see when I came into AA almost 20 years ago, was the drunks giving the police department an award. It just it still seems like it's backwards, but that's marvelous. I'm gonna take that story back and that whole experience. It's just wonderful. This is sobriety. This is the marvelousness of what happens to us and the fellowship. When this miracle called sobriety comes into our lives, I hope tonight to share a little bit about my own story. And about Alcoholics Anonymous in general, and the fellowship, which is my favorite subject to talk about. It has just become my life. It is just such a part of me that it's awful hard to explain anything in other than AA terms. It's just been the greatest gift that ever came into my life, came through this illness known as alcoholism. And I came into AA on Pearl Harbor Day in 1964. So if I last another month, I'll have 20 years in this organization. And I haven't been drunk since my first meeting, and I always get this out of the way in the beginning. And I owe it all to not drinking. This is 100%. For anybody who is new, that's how you avoid getting drunk, is not drinking. That's step one. Then comes the second half of sobriety, which is getting happy with not drinking. Now we're up into the miracle league. Because if you had approached me before I came into AA and said, we can show you how to be happy and not drink, I would have given you a long explanation about how you didn't understand me, or you wouldn't make a stupid statement like that, because there's no way that you can be happy and sober. They just don't go together. They are contradictory terms. And now that I've been in AA, I realize that if you are in AA and you're not happy, you're doing it wrong. And that puts quite a responsibility on each one of our shoulders. It has nothing to do with bad breaks or something happened on the job or something happened in the family and outside circumstances. Sobriety is an inside job, and we're given the resources here to change that inside, and once that is done, why, we find that is indeed no reason to be spending any particular day other than with a very positive outlook, a sense of gratitude, and a real sense of, out of our 12-step, a joy of living. None of this made any sense to me when I arrived at my first meeting. I was there as a reluctant dragon. I had no intention of staying around Alcoholics Anonymous. I had had a temporary setback. You know how those come along. And in order to get the heat off, you take a drastic step like going to an AA meeting. And the little temporary setback that had come into my life, I was a Marine Corps jet pilot and was making a career of flying around in the Marine Corps' fastest fighter airplanes, and the setback that had come into my life was I was a patient on the nut ward of the Bethesda Naval Hospital, and this was, it's just a minor little inconvenience that had come, and I had been locked up there for 6 months. And I was debating with myself whether I had a problem. And you know how us alcoholics are. We can explain away anything. There is just no challenge. There was no challenge in my mind to explaining away why I was there. I had just come from overseas, and I had, you eat that Japanese food and you'll get malnutrition and get in bad shape, and I think that contributed mostly to it. This is back before we had treatment centers in the military. As a matter of fact, the Navy did not have a diagnosis of alcoholism in the early 60s, and so you couldn't have it because it wasn't It wasn't in the books, and so you had to be diagnosed as something else. And I had been diagnosed as, I guess manic, depressive, childhood fear of airplanes. There was a whole bunch of things that were written into my record. And I ended up in this place. AA was not in there for the first couple of months that I was in there, and we just got lumped in with all the crazy people, and it was just sort of a mixed bag, and we'd be sitting around in group therapy, and this is really amazing. They would, once in a while, the psychiatrist would talk about alcoholism, but, you know, alcoholism was the low illness on the nut ward. Even there, the drunks were the bottom of the barrel, and the manic depressives looked down at the drunks. And, schizophrenic, you know what I mean? And you just, even in the nut ward, you have no class. You're just, you got nothing. And so every so often, they would talk about alcoholism, and we'd be sitting around in a group of these little chairs, and the psychiatrist would be talking. There'd be 25 guys around with all different problems, and they would go, well, what about these alcoholics? And you know what these crazy people would say? No wonder they were in there. Almost to a man, they would say, you guys ought to stop drinking. You know what I mean? And I remember looking at them and thinking, God, no wonder they're in here to come up with such a narrow perspective on the problems I've got. If you think the problems I have would go away by just not drinking, you just incredible. Well, the somewhere along the line, Alcoholics Anonymous made another pass at the hospital with an attempt to get a meeting back in there. So I guess around the second month that I had been locked up in there, the corpsman came into the ward and said, all drunks fall in. And it was one of these right face forward march things, and there I was at my first AA meeting, much against my better judgment that I was there, and the speakers went through their pitch and they did a very good job, and I sat there feeling like my privacy had been invaded, that these people came from the outside and now they were going to walk out knowing that the Navy thought I was an alcoholic. And I went up to this guy after the meeting and I said, this was very interesting what you had to say here, and I think you've got a hell of an organization, and if I ever run into a guy with a drinking problem, I'll come around to see you. And I can still remember he started poking me in the chest, and he had a very simple question. It was my first contact with AA and the truth. You know, the truth really hurts sometimes, and in AA we just use it all the time. And he just looked at me and he said, let me ask you a question. Which one of us is going to put his overcoat on and wander out to his car and drive on home to his family? And which one of us is going to put his little blue bathrobe on and go back over to that elevator and go upstairs and get locked up like an animal? And I remember looking at it and thinking to myself, you know, I just met this guy. I mean, I can't believe he would talk this way. And so I had a terrible resentment and went back up. And somewhere 2 or 3 months later, whenever they allowed us to become outpatients, I went home and commuted back and forth during the week, and then I was home on weekends. And it was during that time that I was wrestling with this question of being an alcoholic. They told me I was an alcoholic, and I was trying to weigh the evidence. Am I an alcoholic or am I not an alcoholic? It's incredible now to look back on it. But I was weighing, you know, on the one hand, I had little things like every bit of trouble I'd ever gotten in, every fight, every arrest, everything was due to drinking. The fact that I had had seizures, malnutrition, convulsions, DTs, locked up in the nut ward for all these months, I said, okay, that's on one side of the scale. We got a little, evidence on that side of the scale. But on the other side of the scale was an experiment that I had conducted that weekend. And I had decided to have a beer in order to watch a football game. And I had had this beer, And I went to bed that night, and I didn't get drunk, and I didn't have a compulsion to have another beer, and I went up to the nut ward on Monday morning and behaved myself, and I had a secret. And the secret was I had had a beer, and nothing happened. And this is a lot of information for an alcoholic to wrestle with, you know, that I had had a beer, so the beer was the most recent evidence. This other stuff, these convulsions and DTs and arrests, a lot of them were false arrests, by the way. They really were uncalled for, was dated information. The most current facts we had on me was this beer that I had just had. And it was clearly indicating non-alcoholic, as far as I was concerned. And I remember thinking about this beer. It's real funny when you get this one drink routine. I got thinking about that beer so much I couldn't even sleep. And I would stay awake at night celebrating my freedom from alcohol, you know. It's just, God, it's just wonderful to be free at last from drinking. And driving up to the hospital and eat down at lunch, I'd just be sitting there thinking about that beer and how I was no longer an alcoholic, and I was totally free from drinking. And I just zeroed in on that beer for about 4 days. I didn't eat or sleep thinking about that beer and being free at last from all problems associated with alcohol. Obviously, the thing came to a screeching end when I got a quart of vodka to go along with the beer. And that was when I got into my last drink. I was home on a weekend, and I had been nipping away on this bottle out in the parking lot of the nut ward, and I knew that they were starting to look at me funny again and that the cat was soon to be out of the bag, and now I was home over the weekend and getting drunker and drunker. So I made a big mistake and dialed operator, asked for Alcoholics Anonymous, and they connected me with an inner group, and I told them, I need help desperately, and they said, we'll have somebody over to your house immediately. And I hung up, and I got a couple drinks to stay down, and I didn't want the person to come. The problem went away. And I called back, said, thanks a lot, but I don't need this guy. And they said, too late, he's on his way. So I was left with the dilemma of how to get rid of a guy who's coming to your house on a 12-step call, and it turned out it was another Marine, and he's about 7'8". And I went, and I heard this crashing on the door, and I went timidly over to the door, and there he was, filling the entire door frame, looking in, and he said, hi, my name is Bill, this is a 12-step call. I talk, you listen. Oh, Jesus. We have a serious problem on our hands here. It turned out later on that he was about the only member in this group down at the Quantico Marine Base. There was one other guy, but he was drunk all the time. And so Bill was pretty much the Lone Ranger in this little AA group. It was kind of an outpost from the main Washington area AA. And so he needed another person real bad, and he wasn't going to let me go no matter what I thought I was going to do. And so he got me in his car, much against my better judgment, and drove me off to the Manassas, Virginia area. You Civil War buffs know where Manassas is and the battlefields and so on down. And they stuck me down into my, what I count as my first AA meeting on Pearl Harbor Day in 1964, and I hadn't had a drink in 4 hours. And the group was having an anniversary very similar to this kind of an event tonight. There was a big meal, and there were several speakers, and then it was followed by a hillbilly band with square dancing. So the entire event lasted about 4 or 5 hours. And I had no way of knowing that all AA meetings didn't last 4 or 5 hours. And this guy is talking about going to a meeting every night forever. I mean, hell with it. He's just going, well, we're going all the time. And I'm just going, God, 5 hours a night, 7 nights a week. These people have lost their minds. And besides, I hadn't had a drink now in about 10 hours, and I need a drink real bad. And so on the way home in the car, I made my plans. And I knew that if I didn't get rid of him tonight, I might never get rid of him. You know what I mean? He was talking all these plans, and I know he was going to call my wife, and they were going to get Al-Anon, and there was all kinds of trouble brewing. And so I just was thinking as hard as I could on the way home about how to get rid of this guy. Got to get rid of him. And I came up with a plan that I think would have worked had I pulled it off. But my plan was that I started down. I had 6 kids, and all their birthdays were coming up, one day, one right after another, starting tomorrow night. And so that was my first one. Then it was my wife's birthday, my birthday, wedding anniversary. The parents were coming down, and the dog's birthday. And I had all of this down so that it was 23 nights I had tied up with legitimate sounding reasons for not going with him anywhere. Because my system needed a drink real bad. When you haven't had a drink in 12 hours, things are bad. I mean, this is a very serious moment. And we got to my house, and I had the plan that I would get out of the car and look back in the window and do this thing so that I was already out, and then I could just say, all right, goodbye, you know, and he'd be gone. And I got out and got my finger pointed at him. And when you've been sober about 12 hours, there's a lot of funny things that go on in your system. And all this information left my brain on the way to my mouth to tell him. And I don't know where it went. It went down in my legs or it went somewhere. And I just kept standing there pointing at him. Nothing's coming out. I'm going, and I'm thinking it up here, and nothing is coming out. I'm just pointing away. And he looked at me kind of funny for 20 or 30 seconds, and finally he said, I'll pick you up tomorrow night at 7:30, and don't you drink. And then he was gone. And I guess the taillights were just getting out of sight when here came the words. I won't be going tomorrow night to the meeting with you at the birthdays and all of that. And I'm sure my family looked out the front door and saw me standing there talking to nothing and realized that AA wasn't going to be much help either, but little did I know that that was it. That guy came back the next night, and he came back the night after that, and the night after that, and the night after that. And here it is almost 20 years later, and I haven't got rid of him yet. And he's still in that area, and he's still my sponsor, and I have great respect for him. And we've had a lot of good times. We've had a lot of things happen. I could talk about getting thrown out of the Marine Corps and what a terrible event that was. Went to a meeting every night for 2 years. And didn't get promoted to major and was forced out after making a career. And you want to see a guy with a resentment. Oh, boy. And, you know, when you get resentments like that, you want to stop going to meetings immediately because they will get rid of them for you if you go. And you want to keep it yourself. So I was staying in my room like putting bread in the oven, you know, letting it get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I really was convinced that the world and whatever this higher power was that they were trying to sell me in Alcoholics Anonymous had done me dirty. I mean, you can't have something like this happen to a guy. And, well, you should have heard me. And this went on for about 3 months. I was just not fit to talk to because something had happened that wasn't fair. I don't know any of you keep track of fair and unfair events in the world. What a waste of time, but I was really into that and just keeping score on the various things that happened in my life, and that one was unforgivable. I had classified that as unforgivable, you know, which means I would have to carry it forever. And somewhere around the 3rd month, I remember reading the Washington Post, and there was a little article about a team of Marine Corps officers that were an instruction team that we went around, traveled around the country giving presentations on the future of the Marine Corps about 5 or 10 years down the road. And they had just flown into a mountain in Denver, and they were all dead. And if I had had my way, I would have been promoted and on the plane. And I remember reading that and suffering sort of 2 reactions, you know what I mean? One of them was, gee whiz, you know, I'm lucky I didn't get my way. And then I said, you know, actually, it wasn't that unfair, you know, what happened. And then I remember going that my main complaint had been with this AA higher power. And I remember, you know, you're a higher power. Hell of a higher power you are. You know, all these months I had been grinding away. And I was sitting there reading that article, and the first feeling that I had was, you know, that higher power knows I'm reading this article right now. He's looking over my shoulder. He knows that he's got me. And it was sort of like a kid that got caught with his hand in a candy jar. You know what I mean? I was just going, okay, well, if you just told me this was going to happen, I wouldn't have behaved like this, you know. It was just absurd getting caught in your own resentment, but I think it was a wonderful example for me, anyway, to realize that the story isn't over until the story's over. And you don't know how things are going to turn out. And some of the greatest setbacks, alleged setbacks, have turned out to be the greatest blessings that have ever come into my life, including my first AA meeting. I mean, who would have thought that going into that stupid, smoky basement in Manassas, Virginia, would be the greatest thing that ever happened in my life? And yet, it was. It took me down a road that I've been following now for a number of years that has taken me to places I never would have gone on my own. This idea of a spiritual program, of learning about values, learning about principles, learning about the real necessity for a higher power was not something I was interested in. I didn't need any of that. I had a big airplane and I had alcohol. And I just felt that that was something you could get around to at around age 70. You know what I mean? You could get into character building then and get your act straightened out and, you know, get all ready to die and get all straightened out all there. But you don't want to do that too soon or life will be boring. You know, that was sort of my outlook on, you don't want to get straightened out too soon. You'd be like coming into AA too soon. You know, did you ever have that kind of a thing? Or what if you came into AA and you weren't an alcoholic? You ever worry about those ridiculous problems? You know, what if I really am not here and I'm here doing all this stuff that's wonderful for me? And we just sit here, you know, terrible problems. But at any rate, I had a relationship with alcohol that was, now that I look back on it, the only way to describe it was spiritual. Alcohol was my higher power in every sense that God is my higher power now. It was an exact parallel. I can't find anything different about it. I had absolute faith in alcohol. When I thought about alcohol, I felt better. You know what I mean? I didn't even have to drink it. I could just look out in the parking lot, and if my car was still there and the bottle of vodka was in the glove compartment, I felt better in the building. I didn't even drink it. I just look out, yeah, it's still there. Hell, I could get it and just like that. Well, knowing that, I feel better. So I didn't even have to drink it to get the benefits of alcohol. You know, some of us, even after we get sober, have a $50 bill hidden in our wallet just in case the steps don't work. You know what I mean? You got to protect yourself. How do you know it's going to work, you know? I got this here, and I got my friend down there, and I know the hours at a package store, but, I mean, you know, I've really surrendered totally, except for the $50 bill and my bailout plan, just in case all this garbage is a rumor. And so alcohol was, in every sense, a higher power. It was what I call the single solution to all of life's problems. It didn't matter what the problem was, alcohol fixed it. It was a multi-purpose answer. In other words, well, what's the problem? Well, I'm afraid to go over and ask that girl to dance. Drink this. Right over there. Hi, want to dance? Dance all around. Well, what's the problem today? I don't have any energy. I'm exhausted. Drink this. Oh, now I got energy. What's the problem? I can't sleep. Drink more of that. Boom. You go right to sleep. What's the problem? I can't make a decision. I'm all confused. Drink this. Remember how you could make decisions then? You got a wonderful feeling. What's the problem? I don't belong anywhere. I have the feeling I just don't belong. Drink this. You drink that, you belong everywhere. You remember that? Hi, I belong here. I belong there. There was the 14 promises of vodka. And they were there. They just were there. You just, fear of economic insecurity left us. You remember that? You only had half the rent money. I don't have no money to pay the rent. And then you go in and have a few drinks. You go, bartender, set the bar up. I mean, there was just Eat, drink, and be merry. Tomorrow we could be dead. You know, we had the day at a time even when we were drinking. But this was a multi-purpose answer. Alcohol, it did not matter what the problem was. I never remember having a problem and then going, I wonder if drinking would help this. I mean, it didn't matter what it was. Drinking was the answer. And I had faith in it, and it was something I thought about all the time, and there was a whole routine, there was a ritual about drinking. There was a very close analogy to the AA program. And so as a practicer, or as an alcoholic, and as alcoholics in this room, we shouldn't have any problem whatsoever with our program, which is sort of a one answer to all of the problems. And yet, I look back on some of the things that have happened to me in sobriety, and I have to really laugh at myself. I was sober about 4 years, no, 3 years, and I got thrown out of the Marine Corps. And I was in so much pain and so much anger that I finally had a discussion meeting. You know how the discussion meeting? I'm sure you have the same problem around here. The leader sometimes will go, does anybody have a topic? And then you wait 20 seconds, nobody says a damn thing, and then the leader has to think up a topic for discussion. And we have the same thing back there, and once in a while, somebody will raise their hand. They have a problem they want to discuss. Well, I was in so much pain after that happened to me. The leader at one of these meetings I went to said, does anybody have a problem? Yes, I have one. Well, I got thrown out of the Marine Corps, and I don't think it's fair. Well, let's discuss Sandy's problem here tonight. And I'm going, good, somebody will probably give me a job at least. They'll probably take up a collection, and at least I'll get some sympathy. I mean, I know I'm going to get at least that much out of these people. So they started around the room. First guy said, thrown out of the Marine Corps, huh? I'd try the Serenity Prayer. Jesus. Thanks a lot. That's a real useful idea. This clown came up with the Serenity Prayer. That was really clever of you. Thank you. Another guy says, resentment over getting thrown out of the Marine Corps. Huh? Well, I'd do a fourth step. Jeez, I don't think these people heard my problem. You know. Next guy talked about the prayer of St. Francis out of the 11th step. And I'm going, boy, this is real fanatics around here. And the last guy said, 12th step, you got to get involved with other people. Go find somebody else to help. And that was the total advice I got out of this whole problem. And I remember making a secret resolve to myself, I'll never bring another one of these problems up around here. I feel like a fool listening to the answers that I got. I guess about 6 years later, I was going through a divorce. Boy, was that painful. I want to tell you, that was very painful in sobriety and all those kids and out of the house and just, it was very hard, very hard. Somewhere in the middle of that, I was, forgot about my previous promise, and I was at another meeting somewhere, and the leader said, anybody got a problem? Yeah, I got a problem. I got to tell you somebody, I am hurting. Well, what's the problem? Well, you don't understand. This woman, she did this and that, and I'm tired, now I gotta go through all this, and I'm too old for this, and blah, blah, blah. So they go, well, let's discuss Sandy's problem about this divorce and all these pain he's in. Here we go. First guy. I tried a Serenity Prayer. it was just like a broken record. The next guy says, boy, I do a fourth step. You gotta take an inventory. I'll tell you, you gotta take an inventory. You got a big resentment in there. And the next guy over here, prayer of St. Francis out of the 11th step, and I already knew the last guy, you know. He said, 12th step, find somebody who needs some help, go help him. And I guess 6 years later, I did it again. I was in some business venture, and it went under, and I'm getting bankruptcy, and I'm just going, I'm too old to go through this again, you know, these various little things that come along that make life interesting. And I think I brought that thing up again without recognizing. I said, what do we do about it? This was a pure financial problem. Some of those others might have been classified as semi-spiritual. But this, we're talking now about just raw money, right? Bankruptcy. And I knew a couple bankers were in the audience or at the group there, and I figured, hell, they hear about bankers. They'll probably want me to come over and get a no-interest loan or something. And so, I might as well mention this one more time, that I'm the guy with the problem. I had my hand up, and every 6 years, I guess you can do something like that. Not overdoing it. And you already know the end. The guy over here said, try the Serenity Prayer. Bankruptcy, that's a specialty for the Serenity Prayer. And the next guy said, boy, you got to do an inventory if you're worried about financial insecurity. And the next guy, prayer of St. Francis out of the 11th step. And I already knew the last guy. Find somebody with a problem, go getting involved, helping them. And so it turns out that in AA, we don't get messing around with problems that much. This is sort of, everything is done backwards when we get into this spiritual program. We talk about solutions. We just focus in on a solution. And then after we work on it, we turn around and look at the problems. And this is an interesting approach to life. And it is what I find so fascinating about Alcoholics Anonymous. And we find this especially in the big book under our 10th step when it talks about the problem of our alcoholism itself, which is easily the biggest problem that any of us ever had. And we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and do you ever think about what happens to that drinking problem? Did you ever, those of you that may be new, maybe you haven't run across this yet, maybe you already have, but you ever wonder what does happen to the drinking problem? You know, we never figure it out. We never do figure out why we became an alcoholic, so we don't get that problem figured out on the basis of knowledge. It doesn't do any good to know about alcoholism. You take an alcoholic, you teach him everything there is to know about alcoholism, now you got a real smart drunk. But he's still drunk. He's lying on the floor, and he knows precisely why. But it doesn't make any difference, because our first step doesn't say we were ignorant over alcohol and our life became unmanageable. It says we're powerless over alcohol. So you can have all the knowledge in the world, but it doesn't give us any more power. We got to get a power, and that's what this personal venture is. In sobriety is getting each one of us getting a relationship with this higher power that, for lack of a better term, most of us end up calling God. And I lost my train of thought wherever I was going with that. And that's what this I was talking about the problem of alcoholism. And in the 10th step, I was just talking about God. thank you. Yeah, I remember now. What happened to that problem? And there it was. It doesn't get figured out. It doesn't get solved. As it says in the big book, it gets removed. The strangest choice of words that Bill used when he's talking about our alcoholism in the 10th step. Since our alcohol problem is removed by working a spiritual program. And then it talks about what we have is a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. And as long as I'm working on some sort of an effort to improve myself as a human being, making some kind of an effort to work these steps in my daily planning and my daily life, then there is some kind of a power that comes into my life that takes this drinking problem and puts it over here on a shelf. And I go through the whole day without having to deal with a drinking problem. I don't walk around being tempted by a beer ad or anything like that. It's when I decide I don't need the spiritual program. I don't need help that day. I tell my higher power, I think I'll handle today alone. Got a lot of things on it that you probably won't approve of. So I'll be handling today alone. So he reaches up on the shelf, takes a drink, and probably says, here, take this with you. I'm not going to watch it while you're gone. Now I'm out there going, I see every Budweiser ad there is, you know what I mean? And I'm out there and everything's bugging me and all that because I'm trying to handle this alone, but I'm self-centered. And that's what alcoholics are. We're very self-centered and immature, and it's difficult for us to really make a decision in the beginning whether or not there's going to be a higher power in my life. And I suppose the main thing I would like to talk about tonight to anybody who is new is this debate that a lot of us when we're new are wrestling. I think most drunks when we arrive in AA, we're sort of borderline agnostics at least, if not atheists. I mean, we've had such a life with drinking, it's hard to maintain any kind of a life with any values in it, especially spiritual values. And so all of a sudden we're thrown into the middle of this discussion about higher powers and serenity prayers and God and this and that. And, you know, we don't want to say anything, but we're kind of sitting there going, you know, a lot of this doesn't apply to me. You know, it just doesn't fit that well in my own life. And so I wonder about AA. Is this sort of a religious program? I used to have some of those things. When I look around, I didn't see anything religious going on, but I knew there was something I was uncomfortable about. And I would say for anybody new, you know, AA doesn't have a God that it's trying to create for you. It doesn't have a particular higher power that it's going to prove the existence of. It's got a better deal than that. What AA does, and what treatment centers and what the knowledge about alcoholism does, it presents this bit of truth for you to swallow. If you're an alcoholic, the only way you can avoid dying from alcoholism is to come to believe in a higher power. The only thing that we have found anywhere that can free us from an alcoholic death is a higher power. So the way it works is, if there isn't a God, you're dead. You know what I mean? And I remember the first time I heard that, I went, gee, that's too bad, I'm dead. And my sponsor said, no, that's not the only variable. And I said, well, what other variable is there? He said, you could change your mind. And I went, wait a minute, we're talking real serious stuff now. I mean, me change my mind about something? You know, for an alcoholic to change his mind, like the Queen Elizabeth doing a 180 in the ocean, it's a major event. They send out press releases. Joe is going to change his mind on something. And I often wonder how God feels when I change my mind and allow him to exist. He went, oh, thank you, Sandy. I appreciate that down there. I feel a lot better up here now that you've decided I exist. But what I think the powerlessness over alcohol creates is the absolute need that there be a higher power. And this ends the debate. It ends the ridiculous debate I was having with myself about all of these, the program. The program isn't that hard. It's the fact that we can resist it, that we can fight it, that we can make all kinds of arguments about whether we're going to go down this road or not. And the road is an interesting one. I really believe that the program enables us to navigate through life. It gives us a guidance system that I never believed existed. It has taught me how to get character defects and get these problems out of the way so that I can listen and actually hear what was there all along. I guess in the Bible they talk about the still small voice inside of us. In the big book, Bill writes about deep down inside of every man, woman, and child was the fundamental idea of God. And we were just born with it, much as Bill writes, as we were with feelings about a friend. And drinking just cut a wedge between there. It blocked out any contact, any feelings that I had that there was such a thing in life that would just take us along on a daily journey so that at the end of each day I knew that I had followed the correct path, or if I didn't, I knew where I might have gone off it. And this is what I think the program has given me, is a method on a day-by-day basis to see whether I'm on course or off course. And we find that there's a different way of measuring things that I never thought I would be using in my life. I used to like to measure things by how many cars you have, and you got a great big house, and you got a big bank account, and then that would fix this problem that I had inside of myself. Because even in sobriety, and so many of us find this, you're sober a year, you're sober a couple of years, and then you're still sitting on the edge of the bed late at night, and you're going, what is this thing inside that still hurts? You know what I mean? How come I still have something that needs fixing in there? And what I had done was misdiagnose what that pain was, what that feeling was, and I thought it could be fixed with money or wives or a bigger job or moving to Dallas, Texas or whatever it was. And what I had was spiritual pain. What I had was a signal inside of me saying, you've got to get closer to a higher power. What I was being signaled was, you're off course. This isn't it. You've got to change until this pain goes away, and then you'll know you're there. And you know, the first time I felt that this might be true about me was sitting across from a new person at a meeting. And this new person was talking about how they just got here a couple days ago, and their hand was shaking, they couldn't pick up the cup, and I remember something inside of me just jumping out to that person, and I really wanted them to get well. And I remember going home that night wondering, what the hell was that all about? Because I don't ever remember my heart jumping out to anybody because I was so worried about myself. And it was just a glimpse of what I wanted to develop further. I think the program teaches us to go in and find the very best that is inside of you and explore it. Stop messing around with all the problem areas and go right to the solution. There's a John Lennon song that talks about watching the wheels go round. And he says, there's no problems in life, there's just solutions. And, you know, that's what it is. We're given a solution. And all we do is work it and then come back and look at the problem. I look at our a step that I was talking about a little bit earlier today, which is our day at a time step, the 10th step. And it talks about a spiritual axiom, and it's a very interesting one. It says that whenever we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. And that this is what we should focus in on. That we should focus in on how can I get undisturbed. And the program gives us the power to get undisturbed. The program gives us a way, and once I do that, it's amazing how fair everything looks again. You know what I mean? Some guy did this and you know, I got all upset about it. If I can get unupset, what he did was very trivial because I'm not upset about it anymore. It gives the power back to me to have a rather comfortable day. And if there is anybody who's brand new here tonight, I just know that you're starting out on a journey that you have no idea the exciting places that it's going to take you. And you have no idea what a marvelous person you are. You are going to find out. You are one of the greatest people in this room. You're going to find out things about yourself that you never thought were there because you just have never had the right tools to look. You are a remarkably lovable person. We've just never been able to look at ourselves right. And if you will stick around AA and follow the directions, you're in for a treat that is beyond your wildest imagination. I'm delighted to have been here tonight, and I wish anybody who is just starting down this road the best of luck. You are in for a hell of a treat. Thank you very much.